Glee Club, faithfully raising the floor with guaranteed livable income. I'm Kathy Russell Duggan, and I'm here with my colleague, Isaac Mundy. And together with Alan Smith Reeve, we coordinate the Guaranteed Livable Income Network for the East Central Ontario Regional Council of the United Church of Canada. And it's so great to be with you and to be presenting another episode of Glee Club. And today we are really privileged to hear from two women who have lived an ongoing experience of living in poverty and with poverty and all that that entails. And these folks are have become friends and part of the family of Trenton United Church, Anita and Lori. So Isaac, tell us a little bit about Anita and Lori and how they have become part of your church family.
Yeah, Lori and Anita are amazing people, and you folks will hear some of the warmth and just the compassion that they have as people of faith and also committed to caring for other people who are experiencing struggles in their own lives. I got to know Lori and Anita, first of all, through our community lunch program that we have at the church, and you'll hear about how they began to connect more with our church congregation. And as we were talking about working on Glee Club and talking more about guaranteed livable income, I spoke with them at different points about what it would mean for them to be able to have guaranteed livable income in their lives. And as we had those discussions, I asked, would you ever be willing to talk about A, your own experiences, and B, what you think it would mean for you? And they really wanted to be able to share their story with the wider world. And, you know, we really had the conversations to be able to understand, you know, this will be out in the wider world. And they talk about very personal issues, but they felt very strongly that even though sometimes there were those personal issues, hearing these stories would be able to help other people understand more fully the importance of, well, working on programs that are already in existence here in Ontario, but also what might be possible for us moving into the future as a province, as a country, and in the wider world. I just wanted to say a few things in terms of the conversations that we have. We often speak about ODSP because they are both individuals who are living with mobility issues. That mean that for the most part, in order to be able to get around, they use electronic wheelchairs and scooters. And ODSP, of course, is the Ontario Disability Support Program, which is in place to help individuals who are experiencing different forms of disability. In the interview, we'll hear about some of the issues that come up because they both also experience diabetes and how that can impact people's mobility in terms of sometimes wounds that can appear on their feet. And so Anita speaks in particular about that experience. And again, they move through all of the different sometimes machinations that can take place in terms of navigating the system and how difficult that can be, but also how they've been able to find a way forward and what they hope for in the future. So I'm really looking forward to being in conversation, and also just so thankful for them that they were willing to witness to their own experience to the wider church and the wider world.
Yeah, I think that's so important. We really, when I say, you know, we're privileged to hear from these individuals, I mean, I think that's really true. And really, if we're going to understand, and if we're going to get, I think, really passionate about poverty and about guaranteed livable income in particular, we need to hear these stories. We need to hear about the lived experience, the struggles, the challenges, the needs that people who find themselves living in poverty and certainly people who have to cope with disabilities on top of that are facing. So we're fortunate to hear from them. And so instead of continuing to talk about them, why don't we hear from them directly in your conversation, Isaac?
Great, let's have a listen.
Okay, well, Lori and Anita, welcome to Glee Club. It is great to have you on the program today.
Hi.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, Kathy and I have talked already a little bit about how we've come to know each other through our life together here at the church, and it's so wonderful having you folks as a part of our community. Both of you have had the experience of receiving government assistance through ODSP, and we're really grateful that you're willing to take the time to talk to us about it. I know that both of you have shared with me that you're glad that there is at least some kind of program like ODSP, and you've talked about Ontario Works for folks that you know in the community. It's important to have something like that there when people are experiencing hard times. We know too, though, that the system that we have currently in place needs improvement.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And so what I'd like to ask you is, what are the biggest challenges and limits that you two have experienced with government assistance in your current situation?
Well, I find that there's not enough funding. There's been no raises in ODSP in, I don't know how long. I've been on it for over 20 years, and I can't remember the last raise. Everything's gone up, and especially now with the pandemic. Everything's gone up, and the funding hasn't.
And in terms of with ODSP, what has changed in terms of COVID? What's become different?
Oh, the price of everything. Like, toilet paper used to be $3.99. Try finding it now. You cannot. It's $6.99.
$6.99,
yeah.
$7.99. Yeah. That's crazy. What you used to be able to get for $3.99.
Vegetables. I have a wound I'm fighting, and one of the things I need is to eat healthy. Try buying the vegetables. In the summer, it wasn't too bad. You could find them, but they were still more expensive. But now, it's crazy. I can't afford it. And it's sad to say, but it's cheaper to eat unhealthy than it is to eat healthy.
Right.
And I can't afford to do that. I'm a diabetic, and I'm fighting an ulcer, an open wound, almost 2 centimeters all the way on my foot. And I can't afford to eat how I should be. And they don't give you enough. I'm living in an apartment that's over $1,000 a month, and I can't afford to move. There's nothing I can move to with my chair, and I can't afford to move.
And so it sounds like there's real limitations in terms of also housing stock here in our community.
No, the waiting list is 8 years for government housing.
Wow.
And having a wheelchair makes it even harder.
Right.
So, and thankfully right now there is a special, I got lucky, they just got a new funding for helping people to stay where they are, and I end up getting that. So it's a little bit, not a lot, but it's still not enough. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And they're going great right now for, like, how much their rent, they consider rent would be, $1,048 for one bedroom.
Oh.
That's crazy.
Yes.
But they give you just over $1,000. Like, I figured mine out, I have $6 left after I pay my rent and my insurance.
Right.
I have $60 left.
Because I think that right now ODSP is something around $1,170, right?
Somewhere around there.
So if you're paying rent, that's
$1,000. I get a little bit more because of my foot and that. But without that, I have $60 left.
Yeah, so just not manageable in terms of, well, you were saying, Lori, that when we spoke earlier, like when you come to the beginning of the month and you receive that check, like what do you have to go through to...
Yeah, if I'm going to speak on behalf of Anita here, but if she was to take out what she gets for diabetic diet, if she takes out what she gets for her protein shakes, she wouldn't even be able to pay her rent.
No,
of course.
But she has to put that all towards her rent. And then she can't drink her protein shakes that she's supposed to be drinking every day because she can't afford the milk or the protein diet. I get stuff for diabetic diet because we're both on diabetic diets that we can't afford to eat because she's diabetic insulin dependent. Her sugars go high. I'm diabetic where my sugars go low. So I'm supposed to eat every 2 hours. I can't even afford to eat
3 times a day.
I'm lucky if I can afford to eat twice a day.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
because with all the cost of foods and everything and that have gone up, it doesn't happen.
And that's where we're grateful for the...
For the...
different meals.
The churches and the community lunches and absolutely.
Ebenezer's box meal.
Yeah.
The Christmas baskets that are being given out. Like, we've signed up for the Christmas basket. Plus, River Trent River, they're doing...
On the 22nd, an actual hot meal
you can go get.
Anyone in the community can get.
So it's amazing how the communities have come together to help. And so, that makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
So it sounds like really, I mean, and we came to know each other through the community lunch here at Trent United.
Yeah.
But then that you've also found help from different churches. Mm-hmm. But without those networks, you're saying that it would just be
impossible.
Yeah. Well, when the Salvation Army closed and there was no lunch, daily lunch, a lot of people had a hard time until Crossroads opened up and started doing it. And it was just like, it's hard.
And it took a while to get that word out there that it's okay, relax. Salvation Army lunches are now at Crossroads. And you could almost see the people go,
yeah, yeah.
You know, that sigh of relief because everybody was almost pacing around the streets like, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's quite a good-sized group that go. And when the Salvation Army, like, now they stage it kind of thing at Crossroads. But when it was full. Like, they'd have 1, 2, 3, 4 long sets of tables like this all the way across. And they'd be full.
Wow.
Yeah. And, yeah, they helped a lot of people.
Yes. Are there any other aspects of just the planning, the different decision making that you have to make that you would want folks to know? I know that you've said, Lori, when we've talked before, that there are parts of just having to go through different forms of paperwork and making sure that all of your ducks are in a row that maybe people wouldn't be aware of. In terms of our listeners, in terms of all of the different things that you need to do in order to be able to make sure that the financial support is there.
Well, one thing I've noticed that ODSP has done is they now cover eyewear every 5 years for frames, which frames don't always last 5 years.
Mm-mm.
And I have to get my eyes checked every year because I've got cataracts and I've got...
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Macular degeneration
in my eyes.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm going to need surgery on my eyes and I'm going to lose eyesight. I'm going to go blind in my right eye. I already know that. Nothing they can do about that. Mm. Yet they expect my glasses to last 5 years. Mm. It used to be every 2 years. Now it's 5.
Yeah, they've stepped back.
It just, all the cutbacks, you know, are getting worse.
And so it makes it really hard to just manage. There are all those extra things that probably a lot of us take for granted. Mm-hmm. That's, and then, like, how often would you be meeting with, say, a caseworker in terms of your file, or how does that
never. I don't even know what my caseworker looks like.
No, me neither. You know him by name and that's it.
Okay, yeah. Yes.
No, there's no personal contact.
Every so often you get a letter saying, oh, by the way, your caseworker's name is,
and
this is your extension.
Yeah. Okay. And they'll change it. You'll get a new worker I had my worker for quite a few years, but when she moved here and I met her, she was getting a new worker almost every year.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was frustrating for her because she'd just get to know her worker and get a rapport with her, and then, boom, she'd get another worker, and she had one that was really nasty. It didn't help her at all for anything. Made her jump through hoops. Like, she had a letter for this, a letter for that. And it just made her life hell. And there's nothing you can do when you get a worker like that. And it's hard.
Of course.
I felt sorry for her. I'm like, I had no problem with my worker. My worker was great. And she went, like I said, jumped through hoops.
Right.
And it just wasn't fair. Like, she's like, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, try to get another worker. And she's like, yeah, but then what happens if I get someone worse? So thankfully she got a better worker. Like I said, every year they were changing it. But
yeah, my last worker, if my wheelchair needed a repair, I needed to phone her and get approval first. And meanwhile, My wheelchair is broke down. Mm-hmm. Hello, my legs are broke down.
Yeah.
And can you say no?
Right.
You know, and my worker now, it's like,
yeah,
just get it done.
Yeah.
Your wheelchair needs fixed.
And I had never asked my worker for anything.
She's so, this one here is just wonderful.
Yeah. Yes.
It's like, you know, because
breath of fresh air.
And I have my doctor saying, you need to get your anxiety and stress level down. Okay, you talk to my OTP worker. We might be able to work on it.
So it sounds like there are some folks who are really great within the mm-hmm. system.
Oh yeah.
But there are also times where you can have people that can be really difficult mm-hmm. to work with, mm-hmm. and you're in a vulnerable situation. Yeah. And what do you do?
And you have you have nowhere to go. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so we've talked a little bit before about the Guaranteed Livable Income program and this mm-hmm. idea that. That every person would be able to have a guarantee of receiving at least around the amount of $1,800 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So that would mean a difference compared to now of, you know, $1,170. So that mm-hmm. would be a difference of about $630 a month. How would that help you? How would that change things for you? Or what would be the things that that you would do differently if you knew that that was guaranteed and that that you had that in place?
Well, I'd be eating a lot better, that's for sure.
That's almost double. My check is $934 a month.
Yeah.
Food. Yeah. My
first
freezer,
thing would be food.
Yeah. My first thing would be a meat order.
Oh, yeah.
A meat order in my freezer. Order.
Yeah. We've always talked about doing that and just never had the funding to do it.
Yeah. Just to be able to have some basic protein and...
Protein and vegetables.
Fruits and vegetables.
Because I love my vegetables. I eat them. I just eat them dipped, or I have salads, coleslaw. I just love vegetables.
Yeah. We love protein and fruits and vegetables. Yeah. We just can't afford to eat.
Yeah.
Right.
We would be in seventh heaven.
Yeah. It would make a huge, huge difference for my health and her health.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said...
And me, a Y membership. To get in that pool.
Oh, I can't do that until my foot's healed, and probably for about 3 or 4 months after it's healed, just to make sure it stays closed. But I would look forward to something like that too. That would be very helpful.
Well, can you speak to me a little bit about why it's important to be able to get to a pool?
Oh.
Well, in the pool, there's no impact.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, like right now, and I've tried walking, and I can get from the front with my walker. I can get from my front door across the street and down about, you know how the Freshco has two driveways? I can get from one driveway to the next. I can get severe pain in my hips. So I have an appointment on Thursday to see if she can adjust my orthotics or something to help me. In the pool, there's no impact mm-hmm. on your legs or on your back.
Right.
So you can swim your little heart out.
Yeah.
Doesn't hurt.
Right. Yeah.
And for me, I have no knee in my left leg. It's gone. And I have sciatica, pitch sciatica. And right now I have a hole in my foot, couldn't swim at all. But once it's healed, like, I can't do a lot of walking. I walk with a walker too because I have, like I said, no knee in the left leg. And a pool would make it so I could do exercise in the pool, which I love, done that before, and swimming. I love swimming. Like, I'm the type, literally, I can just lay back like this, and I don't even have to move a thing. You know, people have to use their hands or something to float. I don't have to. I just lay there and I float. My mom was even worse. She used to have to put rocks in her lap to go to the bottom.
Oh, I can fall asleep in a pool.
Oh, yeah.
Lay on my back and just,
This
is the life.
Yeah. I'd be in my seventh. I haven't been in a pool in I don't know how long. And that would be a great exercise, like I said. It would help bring even the anxiety and all that down because it's so relaxing. Just even the thoughts of going to a pool just make me feel better. You know what I mean?
But with our check the way they are now, we can't even afford, even though they have.
Isn't it $30
they
for
have,
us?
They have guaranteed income. Yeah. Like they have a, you know, we can't afford that.
Still can't afford it. No.
Sure.
And that's pretty bad.
So, you know, I think that I just want to underline this because some of the things that you have said are just things that so many people, I think, in our society take for granted, like being able to eat meat or vegetables, fresh mm-hmm. vegetables mm-hmm. or fruit, especially when you're dealing with diabetes, or also just exercise mm-hmm. that right now, even to be able to go out for a walk is incredibly painful.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to have something like going to the pool, again, something that people often take for granted
yeah.
would just be huge
yeah.
in terms of impacting your basic health. Like
oh.
we're not talking about luxury items or different things like
oh,
that,
no.
but just to be able to have.
Yeah.
And my weight, like right now, is causing my depression.
Yeah.
Like I'm hating myself because before I moved to Trenton, I was down to a size 12 because I was going walking. I was better. And I was swimming and swimming and swimming and mm. swimming. And my weight went way down. And my depression went way down.
Mm.
And the doctor was working on different antidepressants and that. And my weight went. Because antidepressants can make you gain.
Mm.
And finally I said to her, you try me on one more that makes me gain weight, I refuse to take them. And she went, whoa, you got to take them. I said, not because of my weight gain. And so finally she got me on one, but now I got to lose the weight again. And I can't eat properly.
I think not working is not helping
you know?
Either.
No, that's an excuse. Because I need to be able to exercise, but I can't afford the Y to swim. And I got to get my orthotics adjusted to do something to be able to walk a little bit. But even just to walk the hall in my apartment, it's killing me in my hips. I've never had the pain in my hips before. So I got to do something because I got to, but you can't afford the regular, the proper food.
So it can be a cycle.
Yeah,
then
it is.
That affects
cycle.
Mental
oh, yeah.
health, physical health,
yeah.
and.
Oh, yeah. Not having the funding to even live properly.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's huge, huge.
So this would make a big difference in
oh,
terms
huge.
Of being able to.
Yeah. More than most people would even know. Like $20 to me makes a difference, but that much, that would be huge.
Of course.
Yeah.
So Anita and Lori, I know that both of you as well are often looking out for folks in the community and you've
oh,
often
yeah.
alerted us here at the church
mm-hmm.
in terms of people that we might be able to help in terms of different
oh,
programs.
Yeah.
Are
yeah.
there any things that you can think as you're imagining members of the community that you're connected with that where GLI, Guaranteed Livable Income, would be able yeah. to help people in the wider community as well that you would want to flag or lift up?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a few people that I know that are on disability that would, it would help for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Anyone on Ontario Works or
ODSP,
ODSP
yeah.
would benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
There's just, especially ODSP, you know, I know some people on Ontario Works that will benefit. Absolutely. You know, and the homelessness, like, oh my, the homeless is horrible.
But see, we're a small city and because we know, we're at that poverty level kind of thing, we see it more and because we go to the lunches and, you know, different things. And we see the people. And there are people that are way off worse that don't even have a home, some of them. And it's just like it's bad.
It is very
yeah,
sad.
Yeah, it is bad. Like, we've seen, there was one guy who was living in the car wash. And we used to take meals from the lunch or the dinner program. And we used to take him a meal every day.
Angus,
yeah.
And
they transported him to Belleville. And then he was back in Trenton. He was living somewhere. He was looking good, doing good well. And then we heard here
found
recently
that he died.
Close to death. Yeah, he actually was back out back on the street, and he ended up freezing.
And I think that's something that maybe people don't always realize in smaller communities
mm-hmm.
is that issues of homelessness aren't just
yeah.
issues in
yeah.
big centers like Toronto
yeah.
or Montreal.
There was a family living in a car.
Yeah.
Like, it's not good.
No.
No. And the program would help a lot of people. It really would.
Just to meet some of those basic
yeah.
needs. And
oh, yeah.
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 What would it mean for you two to know if, in terms of your denomination, like you folks are members here
mm-hmm.
at Trenton United,
yeah.
but also your church congregation, what would it mean for you to know that there is that support for a program like this from folks here?
Okay, my mom passed away 3 years ago, and I was looking for something that I just felt lost, And I said to Lori, I need something. And I want to go to church. And we'd seen this church. We come to the lunches and that. And we live just here behind here in the apartment building. And I said, I'd like to try going to this church. And she said that she used to go to United Church years ago. So we came, and this church has embraced us and made us feel so welcome. Like, we see people from the church around, and they'll stop and talk to us, and it'll be like, okay, they're from the church. Like, we're not quite sure whether we've met them. And so many people in town have, they feel like they know us because they've seen us, and, you know, and it's, we're not sure. But I'll say to Lori, I said, they're from the church, because I'll remember. But you guys have really, really made us feel welcome and part of. And it's made a huge difference. It really has. And it's so nice to see. Like, when I called about Lori, it's bad. You guys, it was instant. There was no question. There was no, you guys were there for her. And it really made
you feel like family. You feel like family.
Exactly.
You really do.
Yeah. And that's why I miss coming to church. Like, this COVID thing is just, and because I'm so worried about my foot and everything in my immune system, and majority of the congregation is elderly, and that's where it was hitting the most at the time. It really, it was like, it killed me not to be able to come. It really did, because it was like, I'm missing out. I want to go. And I'd say to her, it was like, I want to go to church. I want to, and then it'd be like, no, I can't do it. You know, I wouldn't even go to the hospital because they had an outbreak, and I'm like, I'm not going.
That's where a foot specialist has their appointments at the hospital.
I would go. No, there's an 18 nurse that can come in and take care of my foot. I'm not going to the hospital. But so, and I have missed coming to the church, and I know Lori has too. And you guys have really, really made us feel welcome. Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad to hear
that. I felt at home. I have told you that right from day one.
I'm so glad that you have that sense of family here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my hope is that as a church family, we can continue to be at that network of care, but and also to support some of this work in terms of campaigning that our government also treat each member of our society like a family member, and to make sure that we have that basic amount in place to be able to take care of one another. I'm so grateful for you folks taking the time to talk with me about this. And I know that, you know, it touches on vulnerable parts of who we are. Mm-hmm. You folks are such amazing advocates and for the wider community. And so I really wanted to hear your voices. And I know that both Kathy and I have. I just thought I would ask one final question just to see if you had any thoughts about this. You know, we're obviously a faith-based podcast. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering, you know, Jesus was somebody who spent his life healing people and challenging systems that excluded people who were vulnerable. If Jesus appeared in human form in our community today, where do you see him doing the kind of work that he did all those many years ago? Where would you see Jesus being at work in our community today?
Oh, well, the people we see all the time, like that group, I could see him being there taking care of them. Like the meals and the homeless and, you know, the people that need. Like, he would be there doing what he did back then, but now.
Yeah.
Now I could very much see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like telling them, like, it'll be all right. It's okay. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Giving them that sense of peace that a lot of them don't have. Mm-hmm. And it is hard. It's, you don't. Like, you don't know, especially when you don't know where your next meal's coming. Mm. Or, you know, if you're going to have a place to sleep. You know, like, I have a friend whose daughter is living on the street, and it's gotten cold. But she has no place to go. You know, and that, I could see that him, like, it's okay. It'll be okay. You know what I mean? We'll figure something out.
So being that voice of assurance, helping, but also assuring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Well, Anita, Lori, thank you again so much for taking the time and for helping us get a better insight of why programs like Guaranteed Livable Income are so important, and also just to help remind us of why it's important for us to be engaged as a community of faith with our whole community and continuing in this work that of Christ that you just described. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
God bless.
You too. Stay safe.
Okay, so just listening to that, I have so many thoughts and feelings as I listened to your conversation with Anita and Lori Isaac. I have to admit there were parts of it that made me really really angry that we allow people who are vulnerable, who struggle just to live with a disability, and in their case serious mobility restrictions, that we expect folks to exist and take care of themselves on such a paltry amount of support. You know, I think of the CERB and how, and of course, people on ODSB weren't eligible for the emergency response benefit. But in any case, what we expect them to live on in terms of provincial support for ODSB is essentially half of that, so somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000, and when in many cases that doesn't even cover keeping a roof over your head, it's not surprising that people find themselves in such dire circumstances. So I have to admit to feeling a lot of anger and kind of outrage around what we ask people to cope with, but on the other hand, I experienced a sense of joy really when they talked about how what it meant for them to connect to your church community, Isaac, to Trenton United Church, and how they felt welcomed and embraced. For them to describe their church community as a family, an experience of family, that's such a strong affirmation of your congregation and what church can be for people. We can't solve all their problems necessarily, but we can at least give them a community of people who care about them and who see them and who want to learn from them. And I was thinking about Jesus. This is so much of what his ministry was about, and certainly he preached very strongly on social justice and inclusion, but he was also just with people. He made himself available. He came up alongside people who were excluded from community, and how transformational that was. And to hear Anita and Lori talk about that's what they felt Jesus would do, would be to come close to them and to make them feel make them feel seen and heard and worthwhile. I found that very, very moving. So a whole range of emotions there. And thinking about, because we always want to do that at Glee Club, it's faithfully raising the floor with guaranteed livable income. So we always want to make that connection between social policy and the gospel. So Isaac, wonder what your perspective in terms of faith and scripture is after speaking to Anita and Lori.
Yeah, I mean the word that kept on ringing in my head as I was listening back to the interview was dignity. Just so amazed that for both of them, that they, despite struggles that they have passed through, that they maintain their dignity. And also thinking about how, as a world, we can honor their dignity. And it made me think about a passage from 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 to 4, because it speaks about honoring dignity, but also about the element of figuring out how we do that through the structures of power in our society. And so I'm just going to read this passage out. It says, "First of all, then, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgivings be made for everyone, for kings and all who are in high positions, so that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and dignity. This is right and is acceptable in the sight of God, our Savior, who desires everyone to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth." And I just believe so firmly that, I mean, the word everyone is used several times, that we need to be looking at policies and ways of changing our world that make the possibility of dignity a reality for everyone, not just for those who have had different advantages in our world and who have often been born into situations where we don't even realize the privileges that we have. And sometimes I think this passage is read in a way of saying, okay, well, we should pray for the king and make sure that, just be quiet and not do, not rock the boat too much. But when I read this passage, I think I hear that, yes, there are thanksgivings for those who are in prayer, but also we who are in power, but we also need to make supplications and intercessions that we hold those individuals to account to God. And then also as a people of faith, we need to hold our elected leaders accountable as because we want there to be dignity and the possibility for peace, which I think that Anita and Laurie really speak to, that they have the desire to have a sense of calm and to be free from the anxiety that is often placed upon people when they experience things like disability, but aren't really given all of the supports that they need from our wider society. So my hope when we read this, and even just thinking about we're getting closer to an election, is thinking about how do we draw that connection between wanting to honor the dignity of those who sometimes have been marginalized, and how do we do so by making sure that we make the choices and also put the pressure on those who are the kings and in high positions in our society to make sure that those things take place. And, over the last little while, we've been asking our listeners to ask themselves questions as faithful people. And so one of the questions that I'd like to pose to our listeners is, what are the things that you feel preserve human dignity? What allows for human beings to not just live, but to thrive? And then what can I do to be able to honor the human dignity of others, and particularly the human dignity of those who have been marginalized? So I hope that that's something that we can reflect on in this time of change in Ontario, or this time of looking about what the possibilities are for the future. And we're looking forward to being able to extend this discussion a little bit more. And actually, I think that you had a really interesting interview, Kathy, that we're looking forward to for our next interview that took place in another province in Manitoba, but really interesting around this possibility of guaranteed livable income. Could you say a few words before we come to a close?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Of course, guaranteed livable income is not just an idea. It's it needs it's public policy, and so it needs a program to structure. How does it work? Who is eligible? How do they apply, or how are they identified as eligible to receive the guaranteed livable income? And there are currently some reports that give different policy options that have actually crunched the numbers for what a national program might look like. But in fact, if we go all the way back to the early 70s, there has been an experiment, the MINCOM pilot program, which took place under the NDP government of Premier Ed Schreyer. The data from that MINCOM pilot program has been cited around the world as part of the worldwide movement towards guaranteed livable income as a way to support and ensure the human dignity that you were just talking about, Isaac. And so I was very fortunate to be put in touch with Ron Heichel, who was personally asked by then Premier Ed Schreyer to oversee the MINCOM pilot program. And he was extremely forthcoming and helpful in terms of talking about that program and how it was set up and how it worked and the things that were learned. Unfortunately, because of a change in government, the data didn't go very far until our hero Evelyn Forge dug it all out and used it as so much of it as the basis for her book, Basic Income for Canadians. So I hope people tune in to that episode as well. And because we all need to be thinking about, the practical side of this, especially again, as we're coming up to an election in Ontario. What does it mean to put human dignity at the center of an election campaign? And human dignity is something that all parties should be invested in, and all of us, and certainly all people of faith and communities of faith, should be invested in and addressing. So hopefully that interview sheds a little more light on what could be possible, and that such programs are possible.
I agree, and we're looking forward to exploring that together, all of those possibilities. So thanks so much, Kathy. Thank you to all of you folks as our listeners. We hope that you have a gleeful week as we continue to look forward to exploring possibilities for guaranteed livable income, and God bless.